This is The Hollywood Outsider, and this is a special bonus episode of The Hollywood Outsider podcast. We're excited to bring you this Season 4 spoiler cast of Game of Thrones, where we will discuss all things that pertain to the TV show. We're not necessarily concerned with book spoilers or comparisons between the two since, well, we really haven't read them or, in my case, even listened to them.
I am going to bring up the Tywin thing at the end. When we talk about the Tywin-Tyrion thing, I will bring that up. Just so you know. I know that one because that one's pissed people off, so I'm going to bring that up.
Well, alrighty then. Well, we will still have our normal Hollywood Outsider episode every Thursday, as always, and it's available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, or your Stitcher app. This happens to be just a bonus episode, so if you haven't seen Season 4 of Game of Thrones all the way through the finale, be warned, this is your final warning. There's a whole ton of spoilers from here on out. My name is Brian Williams, and with me today are my fellow hosts, Aaron Peterson.
Hello! I'm so excited to be on this end. I like that. I like getting a break.
You like catching it for a change, huh?
Yes, I do.
And Scott Clark.
Valar Morghulis.
He's been working on that all morning. All morning.
Yeah, staring in the mirror, repeating it over and over and over.
Keeps throwing me pennies. It's really annoying.
It took me forever to not roll my R's while I said it, so, you know.
Trust me, I can't say it. So,
this year we're going to try something a little bit different. Instead of going episode by episode, we will be discussing events geographically. And what I mean by that is there are four primary locations this season. We've got the Wall and pretty much everything north of it, King's Landing, across the Narrow Sea, and pretty much everything else, which we're just kind of grouped into the Riverlands. While we may jump back and forth on occasion, this way seems like a good way to be a little bit more efficient and hopefully bring out some good discussion. So load up your big old woolly mammoth and let's get this thing moving.
I got to tell you, I'm very impressed with Brian put the format together. I really like this idea. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool.
Well, thank you, good sir.
And Justin, just to mention, Justin McCumber will not be here. He had a schedule conflict at the last minute, so he will not be able to be here. So we are thinking of you. What's that?
So he will be missed.
He will be, yep. But we're moving forward. So take it over there, Chief.
All right, well, first off, we're going to go across the Narrow Sea, and where we see Dany Targaryen is finding out about what the old saying says, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it, what it's all about. She's been very good, fantastic at freeing slaves, enlisting soldiers to fight for her and overthrowing these tyrants, but she's really having a much more difficult time managing her spoils of war, not to mention the dragons.
I'm glad that they addressed this because I really thought they were just going to ignore that. Because to me, it seemed, because I didn't read the books, okay? And I'm sure everybody that read the books, oh, we all knew that was coming. I didn't know that was coming. I thought she was just going to go around freeing everyone and just be seen as the great queen so that they can take this fight to King's Landing. When she started seeing repercussions for her actions, that's when I started going, all right, her storyline's finally getting interesting again. Because, mm-hmm. Man, it was not for me for a while.
It was, yeah. It felt like it was just, oh, she's taking this city now, she's taking this city, and that's cool. You want to see her kind of rise up and do that, but it wasn't becoming interesting from a character perspective.
No, it wasn't getting interesting at all. In fact, it was getting boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's better than
kind of like she was just buying up every property on Monopoly, but
yeah, pretty much
nobody else getting a chance.
She's got the Baltics,
exactly. And now she keeps passing up free parking because things are not working out her way right now. And the dragons that's an interesting dynamic. I think everybody was kind of under the impression that because she's the mother of dragons, they have to do what she tells them to do. But like any parent will tell you, those kids don't always listen.
Mm-hmm.
They do go through their rebellious stages, for sure.
They do.
I also particularly like the scenes like in her, I don't want to call it a throne room, but it's basically what it is, the stairs leading up to her, like where she's trying to be this, you know, overseeing queen, and these people keep bringing her issues that kind of make her think, maybe the stuff that I'm doing isn't the best idea. You know what I mean?
I don't know if she's really thinking that, though. It seems, I mean, maybe later in the season, but the first half was, I think she thinks she knows everything.
Right.
Like, she's got it all figured out. And people need to remember, she's just a kid, mm-hmm. really. I mean, she's not as young as she was in the books, I don't think. But she's still quite young and mm-hmm. has no experience ruling. just because you're entitled to it doesn't make you a good ruler, as Joffrey can attest to.
Right.
It's just an interesting concept that it's now biting her in the ass.
Mm-hmm. And she keeps teetering between wanting to be queen and wanting to have, you know, to go to her, like human said, she started banging Dario, right? Like, that came out of left field a little bit.
He looks so different. It's probably the change, you know?
That's probably what.
He grew that beard.
Now that you got that beard, yeah, let's go.
Yeah. You know how many people, well, I guess we'll get there. I didn't want to bring up Dario too much, but because it's part of Brian's plan. So we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, I mean, she does tell Jorah Mormont early in the season about how she's going to do what queens do, and that's rule. And we do see her. But she's almost like she's ruling from the heart, so to speak. Somebody comes to her with a problem, and she just kind of gives them. It seems like she's just giving everybody their way at this point, and it's really kind of starting to spiral out of control a little bit. But really, kind of speaking of Jorah, we did find out that he was the one spying on her after all these, well, for us, years. I'm not sure exactly the timeline from in their spot. But Scott, did she kind of do the right thing there by banishing one of her most trusted advisors?
Well, it's hard to tell because Game of Thrones is one of those shows that you can't ever tell if you can trust a character or not. I mean, it's just anybody could betray you, that kind of thing. But of all the characters in the series, Jorah seems to be the one that you can trust. He seems like a guy that you kind of want to root for. It seems really loyal to Daenerys. It feels like it's a mistake. But again, we won't know until later, obviously. But it just, I can't help but like the guy and feel sorry for him because he seems so loyal.
You like him because he's pining for her and she won't acknowledge him. And you got that whole, man, let the good guy win.
Well, it's not quite to that level because he's not really pushing the issue. He's just kind of hinting at it. And you can see it in his eyes that that's what he wants. But he's not really trying it like Dario is. I mean, he's kind of at the sidelines admiring her and more or less worshiping her from a distance.
Some people call that stalking, even in Westeros or wherever she's at.
So I think it'll be a mistake, but again, we won't know for sure. I'm looking forward to season 5 to see where he ends up because I hope he's got to show up again at some point, right?
He does, and I'm really glad this played off because I remember when this was introduced in season 1 that he was this guy. And a lot of people forgot that happened
right.
Because he was, I mean, that's how he was getting his pardon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it came back. I didn't expect it. The only thing I wish they would have done was it would have been built up a little bit more. I just felt like they just threw it out of left field and, oh, now he's gone. You know, I didn't feel like there was any build up or
kind of made your head spin a little bit. Like,
yeah, like,
what happened?
Yeah. I think they should have done a little bit better job of reminding us of the situation other than a previously on kind of thing.
Right.
That's about the only problem.
Because if you watch it on DVD or whatever, you're not going to get that.
Yeah. No, you're not. So no. It's a bummer. But I really like the character, Lord Friendzone. We miss you already.
Friendzone.
why do you think she was more upset about the fact after he mentioned she was questioning him and she seemed kind of, almost okay with it. Just, hey, I want a little bit more information, but I understand your motivation for doing all this stuff. You've been fairly loyal and everything since then, apparently. But as soon as she mentioned that he had notified King's Landing that her child was born, she seemed to freak out. You got any idea?
Well, I get that, though. I mean, she basically was implying that, so you provided the information that almost killed my child. That could have led to the death of my child. You almost got me and my baby killed. You betrayed me, and that's the one thing where he should have said, no, I didn't do that. I mean, he should have pulled back. That's one where you're already deep enough, man. Just say you didn't do it. She doesn't know.
But I think that just goes to show part of his character again. He's so loyal to her that he's not even going to lie to her.
Which worked out well for Ned Stark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. These characters really, that's the one thing. The Hound is the only character I see on the show that seems to get it. Stop being a nice, honorable person. It gets you nowhere. Nowhere.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that the child is just more or less her hot button issue. I mean, that's the thing that she was so consumed with and she was so in love with Drogo. And even though he died, that was going to be her way to kind of carry him on. And any mention of that or any possible harm being caused by somebody, you lost her.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it makes sense. Now, Aaron, I know she was early in the first couple of seasons, she was one of your just favorites. Is she still kind of high up there, or
no?
Has she kind of changed after this season?
Nope. She's gotten probably since season three, I've gotten really bored with Daenerys. I love looking at her. She's a very attractive woman, and she's a great actress. I mean, the way that she masters these made-up languages, it always impresses me. And the fact that she has 19 titles now, I think that's cool. But because what is she? I mean, I looked it up. I was going to mention on the show like what her title is now, and there was just too many words. I mean, it was about three sentences. Mother of Dragons and the Queen of
Breaker of Chains or something. There's yeah, you're right. There's about 25.
Lady whose dragon burns up small children, you know, whatever it is.
Goat killer.
She's gotten kind of bland. I mean, her story is not exciting, I don't think. I have no idea what is in store for her. I was really hoping once she amassed the army, she would start making her way to King's Landing, because I want that to happen, whatever's going to happen.
Yeah. That's what we're all waiting for.
I mean, but we're all still waiting for winter, too. So it's, who knows when any of this stuff's going to happen. It's just one of those storylines where I just... When Jorah was there, I find her interesting. Like, when those two are together, I find those two interesting. But Dario and her, I think that's boring. I don't care about that storyline at all. Her issue with the slaves, though I like that they address it, doesn't necessarily intrigue me or interest me. It's just, it's not as cool as all the other sociopathic political nonsense that's going on everywhere else, you know, mm-hmm. where you can just get into it. Her story and The Wall are the two stories that are boring the crap out of me. Those mm-hmm. are the two where if you took a lot of it out, I probably wouldn't mind so much.
I got you. Well, speaking of Dario, I mean, he was very big. He was a very prominent role in the last half of last season. And this year we opened with him, but really haven't seen much of him since the first couple of episodes. I mean, does anybody really care about this guy anymore?
Well, it's hard to care a great deal because, number one, they changed the actor, who looks completely the polar opposite of the previous actor.
Not even close.
So I mean,
not even the same zip code.
We talked about this in a couple episodes ago that some people didn't even realize it was the same character. They thought it was a new character, which I could very easily say how you would think that because they didn't even try.
I had somebody ask me who was the guy she was sleeping with.
Yeah, same here. And for me, I mean... like you mentioned, I was kind of rooting for Jorah a little bit, mm-hmm. and then this guy comes in and gives her some flowers and says some words and pisses her off, but yet she still bangs him. Like
that sounds like most women.
Yeah,
just my life.
I hope he gets a little bit more interesting because as of right now, I mean the fight in front of Meereen was kind of cool, where he just basically won off the guy on the horse, whatever.
That was good. Yeah,
but outside of that, I don't care about him as a love interest.
What about you, Brian? I mean, you were kind of – you liked the actor, the replacement, right? Because you weren't a fan of the old guy?
Sort of. I didn't mind the guy. I would have wished it would have started with him. But I kind of got used to that guy. The original guy looked young as her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as the books go, I don't know if this guy is actually supposed to be older or same age, whatever. But the original guy looked in her age range at least. This guy looks like he's 2-3 times her age. And he just looks like another bearded guy.
Yeah.
And I just...
There are a lot of beards going on.
There are. And I don't get the dynamic. At least, even though he wasn't a great actor, the original guy, there was a little bit of heat between the two. And these two, this season, just didn't feel it. I will say this, according to Entertainment Weekly, both Dario Naharis and Missandei, the... Danny's right-hand girl.
Yeah, the speaker. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The translator girl. Mm-hmm. Both of them will become season regulars next season.
So. Oh, well, that means one of them's going to die. Yep. That seems to be in the rule book, I think.
Yep.
Well, isn't she, you get the impression that, what's her name again? The hand, her right hand? The
speaker? Missandei or Missandei. Of course, this could be my Georgia coming out, but Missandei? I don't know.
Well, her and Grey Worm seem to be looking like they have a thing going on a little bit, too.
Well, she's going to be disappointed there.
Yeah.
So what's going on? Oh, nothing. All right.
Ooh. Well, all right. I guess I'll finish reading this book.
Although they did have that bit where Daenerys was asking her, so do they have the beans and the frank or whatever that situation was?
What did she say? The pillar and the stones or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, the pillar
like?
And the stones. I like that.
Well, now at the end of season four, the biggest dragon, Drogon, is missing. while she's managed to, while Danny has managed to chain up the other two. All of this really after, if you remember back a couple seasons, she told Priet Pri, who was that blue lip creepy guy, okay, just before she killed him, that dragons aren't meant to be chained. So what role do you think these dragons are going to be playing moving forward?
Well, before I answer that question, I got to ask you guys something. Why did she lock up the two that didn't do shit that seemed like they follow her around and
bend? That's the way everybody does it. It's always the ones that get in trouble are the ones that don't do anything.
I don't understand that. It seemed like a really, like, go find the big jumbo ass that's burning all the villager kids. Why do you need to go after these poor guys? They look so sweet and harmless.
Well, I think her concern is that they'll eventually become like Drogon. Because
your big brother's a dick, everybody else is going to be a dick?
Well, I mean, they are dragons. They're not people.
They
are fire-breathing
dragons. Yeah, they're not really open up to rationalization.
Yeah.
Just like any animal, just learn how to train them.
So I think in her mind, she's playing better safe than sorry. You know, she got the two here, she'll get them. But my thing is that I think that the older one is going to learn that they're chained up and come back and raise some hell.
Ooh, I like that, Scott.
Yeah.
I want those two. Well, they can't burn her. They can't kill her.
Right.
Because she's unburnable or whatever.
They could tear her apart, though.
Yeah, I guess she's not immune to that, right? But they won't.
She's not immune to teeth.
But what I foresee happening, to answer your question, was they're going to get out some way. Scott's probably right. Maybe Big Brother's going to come in and, well, it's not really Big Brother. It's same brother. Twin. He's going to come in, break them out. And I think they're going to singe the shit out of Marine. That's what I think. I think they're going to light that city on fire.
And then people are going to look at Dany, because they're already kind of questioning her, because since she's come, she's freed the slave, sure, but some of them want to go back into slavery.
Which is insane. Yep.
Some of them, you know, their children or goats are being destroyed by her dragons. I mean, it's not like a picture-perfect world like she thought she was going to create for them. And if that happens, they could turn on her.
Mm.
And the other cities as well.
Yeah.
So all this work that she put into the building.
Somebody's getting a mouthful of fire, I promise you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whoosh. What do you think? You didn't mention this, but what do you think about the one dude, the guy that was from King's Landing? I can never remember. I can't remember his name.
The older guy that got that was
the older
in King's
guy
Garden.
That got Jorah booted. What do you think about him? Do you think his loyalties are to her, or are they still to the crown?
No, I think it's to her.
Okay.
I think basically because Joffrey pretty much pissed him off.
Yeah, but Joffrey.
So I don't think that was so much a show to, you know. Then again, like you say, you just never know. And that's one of the great things about this show is you think you got something figured out and you pretty much don't.
Yeah. And you feel dumb.
Yeah.
So, I felt dumb a couple times this season.
So, yeah. But to answer your question, I think he is loyal to her. Okay. I think that would be a little bit repetitive if you basically played the same trick with him that you did with Jorah. But comparatively speaking, very little went on in the warm desert area across the narrow sea. But on the other end of the spectrum, let's turn our woolly mammoth around and take him back on up to the frigid regions of the Wall. Jon Snow is back with the bad boys in black, and he's trying to warn them of the wildlings' imminent attack. Him and Ygritte get reunited, and it hurts so good. And Samwell Tarly thinks he's fallen in love and seems to have even grown a pair. Now, Aaron, in season 3, Mance Rayder said, "I'm going to light a fire bigger than the North has ever seen," or something like that. Did he? Did he really? And what the hell did it do? What purpose did it serve?
It told everybody they were coming. I don't understand the fire thing. Why would you? Okay, I'm signaling. So I assume it's because that's how we have to communicate with all the other people that are all the other wildlings that are attacking, right? Mm-hmm. That's the theory. But to me, all it says is, hey, guys on the wall that can obviously see the fire because you're up on top of a giant wall, we're coming. Heads up.
Right.
It seemed idiotic to me. It was a huge fire. Didn't look that huge on TV. But
I agree with you, but I think in his mindset, number one, it was to coordinate the attacks because they're, even though they have the guys on the wall outnumbered, they're still at a disadvantage because of the wall. And the only way that they're going to make it work is if they coordinated that front. But also, I think it was supposed to be an intimidation factor too, because from the wall you see a fire that huge, it strikes a little bit of fear into you, and they need anything they can to give them that upper edge. the question that you're probably thinking in your head is, you know, well, would the element of surprise have been a bigger advantage?
Seems like a good strategy for war. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what else is a good strategy? If you're going to have the biggest fire the North has ever seen south or north of an ice wall, maybe put it closer to the ice wall.
Thank you. That's where I wanted to go, because that would have made sense. Ice, fire. Fire usually wins.
Usually. What a great strategy. Hey, guess what? We lit the biggest fire you've ever seen, and your wall melted. How cool was that? Feeling badass now, with your giant Thrasher chain now?
Oh, how cool was that, though?
In fairness, one of the things I've learned in reading a couple of articles, stuff like that, is the Night's Watch did trim back the trees approximately a mile or so many hundreds of yards, at least, anyway, away from the wall so that they could see invading people, so they couldn't sneak up on them through the trees.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, in fairness, hauling a bunch of, I don't know, wood up to the bottom of the wall might look a little suspicious to the Night's Watch and give them more of a heads up and lighting a big fire.
Yeah, but see, okay, now here's where my strategery takes over.
Gets in the way.
Yeah, gets in the way from my enjoyment. Because the whole time I'm watching, and don't get me wrong, the battle was great. But all I kept thinking was, you've got 100,000 men. You go, you find one spot where there isn't Night's Watch. I mean, how many hundreds of miles is this wall? Find a spot, melt a hole in the damn thing, and then run through. Problem solved. Problem solved. That's what I kept thinking. And I'm sure there's somebody that watches the show and read the books that are screaming at their radio right now going, that was the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But think about it. I think that would work better than this stupid plan. We're going to pickaxe our way up the wall, and eventually we'll get to the top. That doesn't seem
but
so
even
smart.
I mean, but in my strategic mind, kind of the same thing. Even if you said, okay, we're not going to melt a hole through, but we are going to scale the wall. Same thing. Go to an area that's less populated. You've got them way up. You suspect that you've got them just extremely outnumbered. Mm-hmm. So let's say you've got 100,000 people. You lose 2/3 of them to the wall. You're still at 66,000 men with giant. Well, probably not giants. They're probably not climbing. But you're still at 66,000 men to what you suspect is maybe 1,000 or a few hundred Night's Watch.
Exactly.
And just walk your way in there.
It seems like a better plan. And, you know, hey, let's not go to the main entrance. How about we go to the side door?
Yeah.
Come into the cat door. Something.
Yeah, they all go to that one location where the elevator is.
Yeah, it's, and they all make that charge noise. Arrgh! Nobody can hear you. What? What's the purpose of that? Oh, that's funny.
Well, speaking of fighting and stuff, this season really did trim down a lot of fat by killing off a lot of characters, and the North was really no exception. We lost Jon Snow's buddies, Grin and Pip. Locke, who was the spy, so to speak, and not very good. And also Ygritte, everybody's favorite ginger minge, was...
I think people should go look up what minge means, by the way.
Now, was this a death that you were upset or glad to see?
Fuck Aaron? No. I'm so happy. I hate that character. You know nothing, Jon Snow. Oh, you know nothing. Just die. Die. I was waiting that whole episode for her just to die. Scott, you love her. Why don't you defend her?
She's interesting to me because she's torn between her love for Jon Snow and her people. She feels betrayed by him, but at the same time, she still loves him. And she said right up to her death, she was conflicted up to her last breath. And I found that interesting. And I wanted to see that turn out more happy. There's no way it could have probably it actually makes sense, but. I enjoyed that storyline. I was happy to see her, upset to see her go.
Aww.
I was kind of on the fence with it. I
were you on the wall?
I liked her. Yeah, I know. I start saying I was on the wall with it. But anyway, I liked her, and I liked the fact that she was, her and John were kind of coming to terms with each other and liking each other and trying to work out their differences and cultural backgrounds and that kind of stuff. And then sort of towards the end of last season, it just fell apart for me. And mm-hmm. By the end of last season and beginning of this season, I was pretty much ready for her to go. So
I got to tell you, this is one thing where I will say it's a testament to the actors versus the writing. Because I think Ygritte was written better. She's a much more interesting character on the page. But Oberyn, who had a lot less interesting things to do, is more of a standout to me. And he was he really didn't have so much of genius writing. It was just the performance was so much better to me that I was much more involved in what happened to him than I was what happened to her.
So basically, he had more swag.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, when he came in, I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to hang out with this guy. When she was there, I want her to just get shot with an arrow.
It's because he was in a whorehouse half the time. It's got nothing to do with him.
Yeah, yeah. Now you understand.
That'll make any storyline interesting.
He's living the dream.
Absolutely.
Well, he was.
Now the person, yeah, exactly. Now the person voted most likely to die first by his classmates, Samwell Tarly, is somehow still alive. How the hell does he do this, Scott?
He's lucky. He is so lucky. I mean, come on. He killed a wildling last season accidentally.
He does everything accidentally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the character, but he's got the ugliest girlfriend, too. I don't know. you guys make fun of Ygritte for not being attractive, but nobody says anything about Gilly. Just like, moo, 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 baby.
This guy's doing a great overbite impression right now. You can't see it, but it's great. He seems like an idiot. I mean,
he's coming around.
He is coming around. He's made some good calls, and everybody, I think, roots for him because, you know, he's a fat hobbit, and, you know,
everybody. His name is Sam.
Yeah.
Samwell, right?
See? Just Samwise. You might as well just call him Samwise. he's a very sweet guy, and everybody wants him to live. It's not a character I care about. I wish I did. Brian, you like this guy? You're a big fan?
I'm not a big fan, but I've grown a little emotionally attached to him. I do root for him because he is the most unlikely Night's Watch character up there. So the fact that I think part of the reason he's still alive is his brain. He may not exactly have all the courage. We've seen him cower and hide a couple of times, although it looks like he's starting to gain a little bit of that backbone recently. We saw him yell at Pip, like, you know, open the fucking door. And he's like, dude, I've never heard you cuss before.
That was great.
It's like, well, get used to it, motherfucker.
And can the poor guy please get laid in season 5? Seriously?
Oh, it would break his vows.
Well, you're all okay with John doing it.
Hey, no, he did it for the good of the Night's Watch, man.
Yeah.
That's okay.
He didn't enjoy it at all.
No. He's like, I'm going to do this for the team.
But if you remember, he did rationalize it. He basically went all lawyer on Jon Snow and said, look, according to our vows, it doesn't say you can't have sex, you just can't marry.
Well, of course the guy dating a pregnant girl is going to find a loophole, or the baby mama girl.
Well, he didn't do it.
No, but he wants to do another one.
Well, what do you think is going to happen to them two?
Oh, that's a good question. I really want their storyline to go somewhere, because really right now it feels kind of like it's aimless. It's just wandering.
Yeah, kind of backseat to the main story.
Yeah. I like that they're kind of making him a hero, and I wonder if at some point he's going to become like a real hero as opposed to an accidental one.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an interesting little twist. Did anybody else think that she was going to get violated when that one dude, when they were having the attack on the wall? What's his name? The guy that locked himself in the room with her?
I'm drawing a blank.
The guy that was that got sent down?
Yeah.
Because that inevitably left John in charge?
Yeah, whatever his name, and trust me, we don't know every character's name, so please write them. Write the Game of Thrones guys. I'm sure they know it. And I'm sure most of the people listening probably remember. We're just drawing a blank. But when he locked himself in that room with her in the attack on the wall, did anybody else think he was going to do something to her?
No, I just thought he was just trying to hide, and I thought he was just chicken shit.
I was afraid he was going to either violate her or kill her because she witnessed him be a coward.
Yeah, but I'm thinking if you're running for your life, you're hiding out. Raping probably isn't high on the priority list.
Speak
Maybe
yourself.
Killing, possibly. But I would see him kill her before raping her.
Have you ever been, I'm so scared, I need to rape somebody?
Somebody has. It's Game of Thrones, man. People do crazy shit all the time. Like, weekly.
Now, we did talk a few minutes ago about some recasting stuff, and we've seen it quite a bit. Aaron, do you think it's time to recast Bran? Because we've seen it done with people. The Mountain, for example, there's been 3 different people who's played The Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
can we please do it for Bran? Because I think Bran is about 6'9" at this point and looks like he looks like the lead guitarist for Queen, Brian May. But,
he kind of does, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. It's hard to watch him anymore, man. He's number one. And like I said, I'm not picking on the series. This is literally The Wall and Marine are the two storylines that bored the crap out of me this season. And his story, I just find so tedious. Most of the series, he's just been walking without walking. You know what I mean? He's just been on an endless quest, and poor Hodor is just trekking him around all over the north. And this kid is he's 47 years old, and he's still playing like a 15-year-old.
There's only so many animal pelts that you can cover him up with.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of like where they went at the end of the story, and I know you're going to talk about it in a second, but in terms of the character himself, just bring in another kid. Find another dark-haired kid that can play him. I mean, we bought into a guy with a completely different look and a beard. I think we'll be fine.
But we were complaining about it before, and now we're saying we want to do it with another character? I mean, I understand.
His is distracting, though. It's really distracting.
It really is.
It's hard to relate to him as a child. He's only been there for a year, but he has managed to find the teenager loophole, which allows him to jump forward in time 20 years. I mean, it's almost ridiculous. Especially if you go back and watch like season one when he was pushed out of that window by Jaime Lannister, It doesn't even look like the same person.
Right.
And again, I mean, this whole season, all you've seen is his face. They have had him covered up with animal pelts and being dragged around this whole season. And his head is the size of his character in the first season. It is huge.
Well, they don't want to show all his chest hair and stuff. I mean, obviously, he's probably like Fonzie under there. Or he's got like a John Travolta thing going on. He's got some gold chains. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's old. I don't know why I picture him as the Situation, but that's what I picture.
Well, Bran has made it up to the tree that Jojen Reed, the warg that has been helping him, guiding him along here for the last season and a half or so. They've been looking for us for a while. Not to mention, he's almost met up with Jon Snow for the second time. In season five, do you think this is finally the time that we see more of Bran being more than just a helpless cripple?
I sure hope so, because I agree with Aaron that I've been really bored with that whole arc of the story between Bran being carried around by Hodor and Jojen and his sister. It's just every time they're on, I was just like, all right, time to check my phone. You know, I just was bored. The finale with what happened with him, I found, all right, this is going to get interesting. And I think I'm alone in this, because a lot of people thought that it started to get supernatural and goofy, and I like where it's going. They're talking about...
That's funny, because you were the one who said you didn't want it to get... I remember when we did this season recap for season one or two, whatever season it was, and you said you don't like the idea of it going too mystical or magical.
Not too magical, mystical, and that's what we liked about it, because like, you get the dragons, and okay, but there hasn't been any... mysticism. There hasn't been any magic or anything like that. And this is kind of the first time that it's been there, and I'm surprised that I'm liking it, because I want to see him become a more prominent character. And we're talking about him getting his legs back kind of thing, or...
No.
Or not getting his legs back, but...
You'll be able to fly.
Be able to fly.
And my guess is, this is my leap, and I want to point this out for people that haven't read the books. This is where, I looked this up, this is apparently where his storyline stops. Like in the books, this is like the end of his storyline. There's a little bit, like a real tiny bit more after this. But essentially in the books, his storyline, because, you know, Martin hasn't finished the series. So they really don't know where it goes from here. So isn't that fucked up?
Wow. So the TV show can actually be writing the books starting next year.
Well, just with his storyline. I think there's a lot of other stuff. But for whatever reason, in books 4 and 5 or whichever one he's in, it's still his trek to get there. And then there's a little bit after this. But what I'm understanding, don't start chasing me down, people. I didn't read it. But that's what I've heard. My theory is when he mentions that you will be able to fly, he will eventually be able to warg a dragon.
Okay.
That's what I'm thinking. He's going to be able to do winged creatures and eventually a dragon.
Okay.
That's my theory.
That's a great idea.
I know, right?
Well,
I should write this shit.
There I go, feeling that ego again. Oh, stepped into that one. Anyway, the Night's Watch, they've held off literally thousands of wildlings, and including giants and mammoths, in this pretty big epic fight at the Wall. Scott, did you feel the battle lived up to this really kind of a multi-season buildup?
I really think it did. I was surprised at how into that fight at the wall I was, because like Aaron said, the wall has been kind of the one area that just not super interested in. It's not as exciting as King's Landing or the stuff going on with Arya and Sansa and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So to come out of that episode really excited to see everything that happened, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I don't think it was episode 9 level of awesomeness we got from the
Blackwater Bay.
Right, Blackwater Bay and everything else that happened in the previous three seasons, but it's still really, really interesting. Lots of stuff happened, and I was entertained from start to finish.
I got to say, the one thing that I kept thinking of, I thought the battle was fantastic, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was epic, it was fun, it's probably one of the coolest battles they've done on the show. But you have to suspend all logic to make that thing work.
Mm-hmm.
Because that whole thing that was built into the ice, what? Just like came out of nowhere.
That was awesome.
It was awesome, but nobody mentions it that it's even a thing. And apparently it had to be built into they built this giant thing into the ice wall? I don't quite understand.
No, I don't think they built it into the wall. I think they mounted it to the ice.
No, because the ice broke.
It's not been used in like 100 years all the ice is built up over time.
All right, that's logic. I can buy that. That's fine. I can buy it.
I will never forget that moment, too, the first time I saw that, because we were in a room with a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you saw what was happening, all of us just went, because it just spewed red all over the wall, and it was just so beautiful. Unexpected.
I feel bad because it's kind of a one-time deal.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of just squandered it, but it was great.
Yeah, let's bring it up and pack it nice again.
Yeah, it was – I thought it was a lot more exciting than the – was it Blackwater? Or mm-hmm. Black – whatever it was.
Blackwater Bay.
Yeah, in season 2. I thought it was more exciting than that one, and it was good – for me, it was good because I finally started to say, all right, Jon Snow can be a cool character. Mm-hmm. Because for a lot of this series, I have not liked Jon Snow. I thought, whether it's the performance or it's the writing, I don't know which one it is. But one of those was very bland.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kit Harington really stepped it up this year. I think that battle showed that he's a leader. He's becoming a leader. He's manning up. He's becoming Ned Stark. And I was really impressed with that.
Well, to be fair, he had to grow into that character. I mean, he was a bastard that nobody gave two shits
about. He did, but he was a boring bastard.
Nobody wants
to hang out with a lame bastard. I want a cool bastard. If you're going to be a bastard, at least be fun.
But I don't think you'd appreciate his character as much now if he started out that way at the beginning of the series. If he started out super interesting and didn't have the growth, you wouldn't appreciate who he is now.
That's probably true.
Yeah, you'd be bored with him by now.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid hero.
Aaron, I know you've we talked about this after it aired and stuff, but I know you really like this, almost like a cinematic feel of that episode, The Watchers on the Wall. What was neat, it was just the whole episode was this one event. We didn't see anywhere else throughout the lands,
mm-hmm.
but just this battle up here at the wall.
Which I was dreading going into it.
I was too. Yeah, I was too. I'll be honest, because that's my least favorite storyline. I thought, this is not going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be drawn out, and it was great.
Well, speaking of characters growing, we're riding this a little bit south to what we're calling the Riverlands. But it's just an all-inclusive term for pretty much everywhere else. So please save all your emails or tweets telling us that Braavos or the Vale isn't technically in the Riverlands. Roose and Ramsay Bolton sing, "We are family." The Hound and Arya are one team not to be messed with.
We are family.
Sansa's in a love triangle. What the hell?
A creepy one, yeah.
A fight that might equal, if not be bigger than, the Viper versus the Mountain. Now, we do find out that all of this has been put into effect over 4 seasons, all because of who else? Littlefinger. Did this surprise you, Scott, or did you just go, of course?
It did surprise me, but at the same time, I went, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I not suspect that? Because we hadn't seen Littlefinger in quite a while. Mm-hmm. He just was mysteriously missing, and he's the wiliest one of the bunch. So in King's Landing, why not him?
It's almost like he's not happy unless he's causing some sort of chaos.
Right.
Like his normality is there's got to be a ton of crap going on, and I've got to be at least under somewhat controlling it.
And as well as confusing his own accents. He's got like a different accent every episode he's in. It's like little tinges of different things. I'm like, are you trying to shake it up? What are you doing, dude?
I'm still not sure what his motivation is at this point either. Like what?
Oh, I think it's ultimately power. I think he realizes he can't just have it. Like he has no regal claim to it. So what he's going to do is set up all the pieces. He's playing a chess match. He's playing the long game.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think the first misstep he made was, you know, he sees Sansa as
Sansa.
He sees Sansa as
an extension of her mother.
An extension of her mother, and he's got some creepy love affair with her, and that's throwing his game off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But his long game has definitely been a chess match. He has the pieces in place. He set it up so that he would eventually get the veil. He set it up so all of these things would happen and fall into place so he could become eventually king. That's what I'm seeing.
If he's at – it's at the veil, that's where he's at? It's where his,
right now, yeah.
Right?
Now.
The veil? Getting the veil, is that like a good move in the grand scheme of ruling over Westeros?
Well, now he is a lord.
Yeah, he wasn't a lord before.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it is a step up. It's a promotion, so to speak. And he's in the game as far as responsible for an area of land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And thereby, you know, with his wily, like say his wily tricks and everything, you know, he can acquire others or institute little plans to make people fight and then just kind of come in and swoop in after everybody's demolished each other and say, bam, all right, appreciate y'all doing all the work. I'm going to take over now. So it does, like Aaron says, it's a long game. It's the.
Okay.
And genius. And I love that revelation that he was behind. And it actually took me, I had to rewatch that episode and go, wait, what? And then you go back and you actually think about it, like, holy shit, that's genius. Whoever, yep. I'm sure Martin wrote that. That's genius. That part was genius because I did not see. I saw that he was involved to some extent because from the get-go, he tells Ned Stark, don't trust me. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't trust me. And Ned Stark made the mistake of trusting him, and that didn't work out so well. And I think he's just been playing this game, getting himself in place for the throne. And I think Sansa's really where it's screwed up.
Yeah, she is his Achilles heel. Or kryptonite, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Hell, he probably knows Achilles. I'm sure that guy's still hanging around.
Now, after being told, I believe last season, by Littlefinger that she isn't good at lying, and she did gain some admiration from him when Sansa, I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she did gain some admiration from him when she saved his ass while he was being questioned in front of that group. Mm-hmm. So what do you think her motivation was, Aaron?
Oh, she's becoming a player. Yeah,
she's becoming like him.
Yeah, I think, you know, and people say, well, they, you know, that's she's where did she come up with this acting and everything else? I mean, she hasn't been that character. I think people haven't been paying attention. She's been acting since season one when her dad was beheaded. I mean, she's had to sit there and swallow all this pain and agony, and she's learned how to lie. She realizes that everything she does is going to affect her life, and she needs to start taking charge of it. Otherwise, other people are going to make that determination for her.
You spend enough time with Littlefinger, you're going to learn how to manipulate.
Yeah, I think she realizes that's how you get ahead. That's how this is going to work out for her. That's the only way it's mm-hmm. going to work out for her.
Everything that she's done up till now has been because of somebody else. Right? Mm-hmm. Somebody's given her away to marriage. It's always – now she's finally starting to take control, and that's – Sansa that I like to see, because she really bugged me for being such a naive twat for her the first couple of seasons.
Wow.
And it drove me nuts that you've got all this stuff staring you in the face. Why are you such an idiot?
Mm-hmm.
And when we see her walk down wearing that dress, it was like, wow.
Yeah.
Now she's coming into her own. Her eyes are opened. I'm not sure if she's playing Baelish or if she's just teaming up with him to get, you know, like you say, she's kind of figuring this stuff out herself. And if she's just like, well, I'll ride this horse till mm-hmm. something better comes along.
That look on her face had a slight hint of seduction in it.
Yeah. Bounce. Because she's realizing, mm-hmm. she realizes what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And now she knows what strings to pull with him.
Right.
good call on her part. Well, and if you think about it, he is the only person outside of her family that has done anything to help her. Like, yep. Sincerely, even though he is a shady son of a bitch, he is the only one that has helped her. What's the lady's name that you guys love, the girl that almost married Joffrey? Marjorie's grandmother. What's her name?
Elena Tyrell?
Oh, yeah. When she, I think she finally realized that Tyrell set her up. I mean, she did. And people keep saying she's a good character. That woman set it up knowing that Sansa would take the fall if anybody found the poison. She didn't plan on Tyrion taking the fall. She planned on Sansa taking the fall. Mm-hmm. So she confided in Tyrell exactly all the issues with Joffrey, and the woman used it against her. Everybody keeps using everything against her. Littlefinger's the only one that seems to support her. Mm-hmm. So I think she's picking her battle, and that's the guy that she wants to be on his side.
He's just not doing it for good reasons, though.
Oh, no, he wants to get in that nook and cranny. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Alrighty, well, before I make any more crude jokes, let's...
No, call somebody a twat again. Do that.
More ginger men's jokes?
Jeez.
Let's go with Roose Bolton. He's the bannerman that betrayed the Starks. He finally gives his bastard son Ramsay his name after he proved his worth by taking over Moat Cailin, by basically getting Reek / Theon Greyjoy to play Theon Greyjoy. How do you see this playing out now that they've taken over Winterfell, Scott?
I just looked up Minge. I just learned what that means.
You didn't know?
I didn't know. No. Yeah.
Gives you a little dirty thought, doesn't it?
God, old fire crotch. I'm really excited to see what happens in this, because when you see Reek or Theon, whichever we want to call him, he looks visibly shaken. Like, they're on to me. You know,
he does.
I don't know how long he's going to be able to hold on to that, because he seems genuinely afraid of everything. Obviously afraid of Ramsay, but he's afraid of everybody that's going to figure him out. I don't know if he's going to be able to hold on. He's got to break at some point. I mean, he's already broken in a domesticated sense, mm-hmm. but he's got to snap or something.
Well, you know, he almost did snap when the guy was started questioning him,
right?
At Moat Cailin before he got an axe.
So he's either going to get more comfortable with that and get over that, or he's going to snap and something bad's going to happen. And I kind of want to see the latter.
You want him to snap?
I do, because I mean, Theon's not a character that I particularly liked as in terms of, like, I was rooting for him. I was never rooting for him, mm-hmm. but I start to feel really bad for him. I mean, he's getting one of the worst raw deals next to outside of Sansa, maybe.
See, I will say I disagree with that, because he also barbecued a couple kids, much like Jaime Lannister pushed the little kid out of the window. I don't care what the reasons were. Oh, I did it for my love, my sister. You're still a dick, and you're always going to be a dick in my eyes. I'm fine. Cut his penis off. Take the rest of it. Whatever you got to do. I don't care.
Yeah,
I hope
he
suffers.
Did he really do that?
Yeah. He barbecued two innocent children.
Because
they were the farmer's kids. They weren't, of course.
Right. But remember his reaction when that happened? He looked genuinely surprised that there were two children burnt to a crisp hanging on there. He looked like, what just happened?
No, and then, he ordered it. He did order it.
Did
go
he?
Back, go back and rewatch it. Okay. He ordered it. Yep.
Then why did
and
he have
also
that
had a couple
face?
Of times to turn around. I mean, Maester Lewin, is it the one that was the with the Starks? The
yeah,
Starks,
sweet old guy.
Yeah. You know, he gave him multiple times. Look, just turn back now. Just, you've done enough.
Walk
all
away.
Will be forgiven. Just for God's sakes, pull your head out of your ass, and we'll make sure everything works out. And he didn't, because he's got daddy issues or mm-hmm. what have you.
Not anymore.
So I'm all for whatever. I kind of hope he kills himself. I don't think there's any way that he gains enough sanity to turn anything around and redeem himself. I think at this point he'll snap, but when he snaps, he'll just go drown himself in the water. Or...
No, I think he's too afraid to do that even. I think at this point his mind is so jacked up, he's convinced that even if he kills himself, Ramsay will come after him in the afterlife somehow.
I will say in one defense of that, because I hated the aspect, it was last season, where they were doing all the torture. I thought, God, that dragged on so much, because they did it in so many episodes where they're torturing him and they're letting him go and all of that other mental breakdown that they were working on him. It actually played out for this season because I probably wouldn't have bought it if they didn't show all that.
Right.
So I now that they've actually rolled out season four, I've learned to give the showrunners a little bit more credence with some of the minor storylines because sometimes they do play out down the road.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, speaking of deadly duos, the Hound and Arya Stark have formed an unintentional alliance, so to speak, as he escorts her to the Vale to sell her off to her, well, now dead aunt. Now, I personally love this dynamic, and these two had quite the journey this season. Aaron, would you?
This is two of my favorite characters on the show, which is funny because I didn't like the Hound before. I thought the actor was not that great to me. And this season, he really came alive. He had several scenes, you know, I want all the chickens or whatever. And the relationship with he and Arya, I love how that played out. I think everybody just assumed they were becoming best friends. And by the end, you see a completely different Arya. And you see someone who has been, she's been methodical the whole time. I think people were mistaking her for being naive. And I don't think that girl's there anymore. I think she is taking it to a different level, and she's ready to become really sadistic.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened at the end of the show, of the season, in the finale, was probably one – I don't think people give it enough credence. I think that's one of the creepiest character changes we've seen yet, because that was a real sadistic way to leave someone to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll kind of jump ahead a little bit. Scott, why do you think that she left the Hound to die instead of just writing him off her list like he basically wanted her to?
Because that's what he wanted. I mean, he now that she had him, more or less, she didn't want to give him what he wanted, make it any easier for him. He wanted her. She wanted him to suffer. I mean, even up to this point, he was still on her list. No matter how good of quote-unquote friends they were, she still wanted him dead and wanted him to suffer for what he had done. And the fact that she could sit there and stare at him, wordless, almost emotionless countenance on her face, it was, like you said, just super sadistic. He's basically begging her to finish him off, and she just quietly gets up and walks away. I thought that was awesome.
Can I tell you, Maisie Williams is probably my favorite actress on that show. My favorite actor on the show, Arya. She is easily my favorite on the show. I think she is the best actor working out of all of those actors. And there's a lot of great actors on that show, even Peter Dinklage, but I think she is the best.
And what's cool about her, too, is that she's not 6 foot tall. I still buy that she's young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And she doesn't have a beard.
Yeah, that too.
That helps. That definitely helps.
Season 5, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Arya with a beard. they
did,
their journey pretty much did end pretty poorly, at least for the Hound anyway, when they met up with Brienne of Tarth. She tries to convince Arya to come with her because of her promises to her mother, that kind of stuff. Now, Aaron, the fight between the Red Viper and the Mountain got a lot of talk for a pretty much a mind-blowing scene, literally and figuratively.
I see what you did there. Poosh!
Poosh!
That's a great sound effect, but go back and listen to when that head exploded. It's great.
And for me personally, this fight scene was way more intense and visceral.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yeah. You know why I think that is? Is because they managed to make a character that we didn't give two shits about two seasons ago and made it a character we actually want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you've got Brienne, who everybody's always rooted for. I mean, she's always been a very honorable character. And the Hound, who is a very dishonorable character, but he has, you know, you've learned to sympathize with him. You've heard his story about how his brother tortured him. You know, you've heard he has seemingly the right piece of advice for here's how you go about your business in Westeros. You play vicious or you die vicious. You know, that's really his theory. And he's right. He's absolutely right. And this fight seemed like a real fight. It seemed like
it, you know, really did.
Yeah. No holds barred, no punches pulled. They just went for it.
Yeah. It wasn't one sided. There was nobody. You really had no clue who was going to win this out up until the final moments. There was no one that was winning.
That was one thing I'll give major props for is, you know, the last couple of seasons, we've seen Brienne fight a couple of guys. She's taken on Jaime Lannister with being, even though he's one-handed, that kind of stuff. But I've never really been convinced that she's as tough as what she's portrayed to be until this fight. I mean, she took multiple punches from the Hound.
And he is not a small guy.
Turned around and gave them right back.
Yeah. Yeah. And they did whatever they could. They used whatever they could. They just fought. They went for it. Hey, I got to tell you, it was – and the I guess for me, the fight was much more intense than the Viper in the Mountain because I would have been disappointed either way. There was no way that fight went that I would stand up on my couch and go, fuck yes, mm-hmm. yeah. where the Viper in the Mountain – there was one way I would go, fuck yes, and the other way, which I did, which is, fuck no! And this one, I just don't feel like there's a winner for mm-hmm. me.
Yeah, it I would not have been happy, you know, if Brienne had died, if the Hound had died, or if they had fought to a draw and became friends. I was not going to be happy with any outcome, I guess.
Well, I want to add something here too, guys. What do you think? Obviously, we haven't read the books, so we don't know what happens, and a lot of people that are listening might. Do you think the Hound is dead?
I think so.
I think people do, but I live by the theory that if I don't see them die on a television, I don't consider them dead.
I think that he's not dead, and I'm going to tell you why. One specific reason, because there was nothing that involved fire in his death. I think that the whole with his face being scarred from being burned by his brother and him being afraid of fire will have to play into his death at some point.
I think there's no have-tos with this show, honestly. I mean, I get what you're saying.
But why build that up for, you know...
Why build up Oberyn is going to get revenge and he really doesn't? Why build up that Ned Stark is an honorable man if it really works
there's
against him?
A lot of unfulfilled
yeah.
build-ups.
I think the show, as written, seems to be very much a... anything that you have expectations for, right. It's taking the expectations audiences have from every other show or book that we read and saying, no, this is a world where all those cliches and all those things you expect are going to happen are never going to happen. Mm-hmm. Heroes rarely, I think this is the first season we've ever seen someone actually get revenge on someone with Arya and the Hound and Tyrion on Tywin. That's the only time that's happened in the series that I can think of. Because mm-hmm. every other time you're like, oh, finally we're going to get it. Oh shit, that character died. Oh shit! That character got his penis cut off. You know, it just doesn't happen.
Well, alrighty. Well, basically, our last little bit here, I guess, kind of finishing up with Arya. She finally, and we've kind of been waiting a couple of years for this now. She finally gets to name drop Valor Morghulis to some Bravosi guys and kind of see what happens. She basically, I guess, she's headed to Braavos.
What I liked about her there is she was just completely deliberate. She walked up to this guy without even hesitating. Here's my coin, Valar Morghulis. Get me on that boat. Get me the hell out of here. It was awesome.
I like seeing that play out. I was always wondering, what is that going to do? Well, there you go. There's something that played out, finally. We finally got that was built up, and we finally got some payoff. Mm-hmm. I was really wondering how that worked. I mean, so what? You show this coin, and you say some words, and that's going to get you some magic passage? And apparently, it does. Mm-hmm. And it gets you a cabin, too.
Yeah, her very own cabin, yeah. I just hope that she runs into Jockin again in season 5.
I like
5.
That dude. That dude is cool.
Absolutely. And he's actually one guy you can get 2, 3, 4, 5, 12 different people to play. And
yeah, and it makes sense.
But see, I want that same guy. I really like that guy. Yeah. I don't know why. He was just so creepy.
He had that swag or something, that weird mystery about him that he just seemed cool.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't know how to use pronouns.
All right, Deech.
All right. Well, while the Hound's death was a fairly big event, you can tally up the total deaths of prominent characters from all the other regions, and they pretty much wouldn't add up to the amount that happened in King's Landing.
Holy shit, yeah.
So we're driving our little mammoth a little bit farther south.
We're driving. There's a steering wheel on it now.
That's it. Just giddy up. So we're going to head on down to King's Landing. Joffrey eats some bad cake. We have a brief affair with a charismatic Oberyn Martell. The Lannister children stand up to Big Daddy while Daddy takes it in the pooper.
That's so funny.
Let's start with dessert first. Joffrey is dead. Now, who jumped up, pointed at the TV, and laughingly screamed like Lloyd Christmas when this happened, or was that just me?
It was pretty close. Especially for that to happen so early in the season, something that huge was mm-hmm. was so unexpected, and you finally felt like, all right, something good is happening. Because everything leading up to that had been, huge events, but nothing that we were excited about. And we were all so excited about that death. It was it was awesome.
I think there's a twofold to it, though, because I don't think there is somebody as joyfully evil left in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And right. that takes away a little bit of that momentum, because he was a guy, even though everything he did, every time he's on screen, you're like, oh, shit, something fucked up is going to happen. And I think they're painting Ramsay to take that spot, and it just he doesn't do it as well for me. Mm-hmm. Joffrey was sadistic, and I loved him in a really bad way.
Yeah, I get
so that. I was a little sad to see him go, but I was glad he went out choking like a bitch.
In front of his mom.
In front of his mommy, yeah.
Yeah, in that aspect, I hated to see him go also, just because nobody has drawn as much emotion out of me and hatred for a character as he did. And to kind of see him go was bittersweet. I was glad to see it. And selfishly, he died on my birthday. So I feel like they gave me a present by killing off the person I pretty much have hated the most in TV. Hated in a good way, because it's a testament to the writing and the acting that Jack Gleason, right. That he's done so far up to that point, because again, I have never just gotten so upset over a character as him.
Yeah, he did some pretty sick things. And I don't know, I kind of wonder how many people that were in that audience were applauding his death too. You know, I mean, even both characters and actors, you just know some of the actors like, good, I hate that son of a bitch. You know, not the actor, the actual character, but.
And I will say there was, you know, when everybody was coming up, Tyrion, and giving him presents, you know, he got the swords, Tyrion gave him the book, and he actually said kind words, and everybody kind of looked at him like, what? So we're like, all of a sudden, Joffrey is being nice to Tyrion, and he was telling him how, hey, you know, now that we have peace, now's a good time to learn and read these books and learn the history and all this stuff, and it can only make me wiser, like, whatever. And I was like, oh man, maybe like these other characters, he's starting to grow a little bit too, but nope. I was wrong.
Yep, you're wrong.
I was so wrong.
You're wrong. Who called it among the three of us? Who saw it happen?
With the death?
Yeah, with him dying.
I knew.
Oh, somebody ruined it for you?
Not directly. It was
how does somebody indirectly ruin that?
Comments were made, you know, about, well, you're going to like this episode kind of thing.
Oh, I hate that shit.
Yeah, like, so I wasn't actually told, but I had, you know, it's the wedding, you know. And
hey, book readers, anytime you say that is a spoiler, just so you know. Anytime you say, I can't wait to see what happens, that's a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
So stop it.
Thank you for that public service announcement.
You're welcome. The more you know.
Now that the much softer and hopefully more stable Tommen Lannister takes over, is this what the Seven Kingdoms need, or is he just keeping the seat warm for somebody else, Aaron?
Well, I mean, this show, it's a revolving door, I think. So you never know. He does seem like the first one in the show that seems like he should be king. Even though he's young, he seems like he cares. And when Tywin was having that conversation with him about what a king should be, he seems to grasp it. I actually would be okay with him being king. I think it is what the Seven Kingdoms needs. And I think Daenerys will probably kill him. Or Dragon will. Dragon will singe his sorry ass.
Well, I think that if anything, this universe has shown us is that good characters aren't going to work out. You're not going to be a good king. You're not going to be, you know, make good decisions and live.
That's true. Yeah,
true.
You're probably not going to make it.
No, well, that's a very good point, and you're absolutely right. However, Marjorie Tyrell has her claws in him, as Cersei has told us.
Mm-hmm.
She's got her claws in him, and she knows how to work the people. So
she does.
So it may be, you know, now we've got basically, as it appears, with everybody who's gone their way one way or another. Basically, it looks like we've gone from Lannisters running the show to possibly the Tyrells running things.
It's possible. One question I want to ask, because you mentioned Joffrey and we didn't mention it real quick. What's your opinion on people banging on their children's casket. Is that okay by you guys, or is that a no-no in your family?
Well, I've never done it.
It depends on the situation, I guess.
It's all build up. It all depends on what the outline story is for you guys.
Here's the difference. It wasn't a casket. It was a bed with his body visibly exposed. It wasn't covered up. It was just right there.
It was awkward.
Well, it's not like he was watching. I mean, those weren't his eyes weren't open. Those were just rocks painted like eyes. So it's not like he saw anything. And he was dead, so he didn't hear anything. So he's basically just furniture.
So King Furniture. So you're cool with
it. I'll say go for it.
All right. Hey, everybody's got their thing, whatever you're into. I was just wondering.
Now, at the wedding, Cersei freaks out and accuses Tyrion of killing Joffrey. So he's not only accused of killing Joffrey, but basically he was one awesome badass. Pretty much every Emmy winning actor, that he was just awesome. As far as acting goes, I agree with you. Arya is fantastic, but I think Tyrion pretty much owned this season with his three or four scenes. What do you think?
I think he was great. I'm probably in the minority to where I even though I do think Peter Dinklage should get a supporting actor Emmy, I think Arya was better. I liked Arya better because hers was a lot more, it was a lot smaller, and she had to make a lot more work with less. So for me, hers wasn't quite as outwardly dramatic, but it was the subtle changes that the actress put onto it that made it a lot more interesting to me. But yes, Peter Dinklage is awesome, and his speech in that court was fantastic. I do think the character was a dum-dum by going up there and just picking up the glass and going, hey, what's this? Is there poison in this drink? Oh, shit, they're staring right at me. It must be me. I mean, it just... That part was
probably not the best time to be playing CSI and seeing if there's poison in it.
It really wasn't. Really bad call. Really bad call. But yeah, he did a fantastic job this season.
I agree. The speech in court was, I must have watched that three or four times.
Oh, so good.
Because he basically said what we all were thinking and wanted to say to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just to finally get that release from a character that we already like was so satisfying.
He's going dark, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I gotta admit, I kind of like I thought it was a little bit odd, especially when you are expecting the big fight. But the little conversation between him and Jamie about their mentally challenged cousin.
Did you like that or didn't like it?
I liked it.
Okay. I did too. If you finally felt like they were for sure brothers, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, what did you do? Why did you do this? Where have you been? What's going there? It was like just an actual conversation, and you actually saw that they actually like each other, and you kind of see that brotherly love there where it's really kind of been missing quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did add a little bit to it. The story, I thought it was kind of nonsensical, but I guess I see what you're saying. It did help with that, yeah.
Well, Tyrion's whore wife, Shay, betrays him at the trial. Now, do you think she did this just because she likes to get paid, or was it vengeance for breaking her heart, Scott?
I actually have a theory about this whole thing with Shay, and I think it's neither. I think that we're going to find out that Shay was actually prompted to do all this with the promise of Tyrion being taken care of. So they're like, we'll make it so that he lives. If you come up and do this and something. I think something like that's going to happen.
Well, I don't think there's too many people left who can reveal that information.
Right.
Yeah, both of them are dead, the ones that would really know about
that. Yeah, that's true. But I have this feeling in the back of my head that at some point, because Tyrion's still alive, obviously, he's gonna find that out and just hate himself for doing that.
I think he's already going to hate himself, but I don't agree with that theory. I think... She was manipulative from the get-go. I think she... Now, I know that the Shay in the books and the Shay in the show are different. Mm-hmm. I don't really care what that difference is. We're only talking about the show. And in the show, she's painted as someone who is a prostitute, but she falls in love with him. And then when he sent her away, I don't know if Tywin found her or if Bronn just didn't take... He obviously did not put her on that boat. He obviously lied and did not put her on that boat. She never went on that boat. Tywin got a hold of her. Yeah, well, I don't think he did.
At the wedding, though, Cersei points out to Tywin, "Hey, that's the whore," and he says, "Basically, round her up and put her in my chambers."
Yeah, but Bronn told Tyrion that I put her on the boat myself. That's what he told him.
Ah,
when he came to the prison and talked to him, when he came to the prison to talk to him, he said, "I put her on the boat myself." And then he admits that, "Hey, I've been bought. I totally think he did not put her on that boat." And Tywin, you know, and he struck a deal as well as with Cersei. So, I mean, that happened. I just think she was hurt and she decided to screw him because, you know, she's at her center, she's a whore. And when he walked in that room and she said, "My lion," and it wasn't, she knew it wasn't him. You know, he knew it was Daddy's chambers. Because you heard that, right?
Right.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. I think that just was his snapping point.
Because that was his name. That was his pet name.
Yeah, the one thing I wish they would have done a little different was they made it feel like self-defense, like he killed her in self-defense almost, like she went for a knife. I would have been more struck by that moment, or stricken by that moment, whichever way you want to go with that, if that never happened and he just killed her out of blind rage. To me, that would have been...
Like in her sleep kind of thing?
He just killed her. Like,
She's in shock. He just charges her, jumps up there, and just chokes her out.
Out of betrayal, yep. That's what I think, because they're definitely trying to paint Tyrion as going extremely dark for the next season, and that's how I think you do it. I think by making her go for the knife, it kind of gives him an out, because they were afraid of making him seem like the too dark character when everybody loves him. But I really think that would have benefited the character a little bit. Personal choice.
I hear you. Well, now Tyrion's been found guilty. Pretty much all is looking bleak until an unexpected visitor offers his assistance. And of course, we're talking about none other than the Red Viper, Oberyn Martell. Now, first, Scott, has anybody else been so well-liked in such a short time span?
I don't think so. He was a favorite from the very first episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything from his fun in the brothel to being real violent with the guys that were singing that song that pissed him off or whatever, and then he put the knife through the guy's wrist, and he was just instantly likable. You just wanted to cheer for him right from the get-go. It was awesome.
Who doesn't love Puss in Boots? That's what I'm saying. As soon as he drops that accent, I'm like, what?
Inigo Montoya.
Ah. Hello, I am here to save you, my friend. I loved his little speech where he's in the cell and he tells Tyrion, you know, about him as a baby and how nobody wanted him. And he's like, he's just a baby. You know, just that whole speech was so beautiful, I thought. And honestly, the most moving speech the show's done, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, I love the actor, is it Pedro Pascal, whatever his name was. He did a great job, and I was shocked that a character like that registered so much in such a short time.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, even when he was on the screen, he wasn't on there very much.
Yeah, no, he wasn't.
But he really made the most of his time, and that was he was just fantastic, just fantastic. And that speech, like you say, we're talking about the little baby, was oddly emotional for me.
Everything that came out of his mouth was almost soothing,
mm-hmm.
and just made sense. He just kind of, you know, he's in this crazy world, and he just has it all figured out.
Mm, apparently not all of it.
Well, yeah.
He should have wore a helmet. That's one thing. There are very few characters in the show that register with me very quickly, because a lot of them, they just change. I mean, the characters on the show change so frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And his just seemed so relatable and sympathetic, as well as, you know, a little badass. You know, he was just a cool character. And the actor was so good at playing him. Man, I loved that. I loved Oberyn. I'm still bummed that they killed him.
Mm-hmm.
I still keep wanting to, if I go back, can I just remove that episode and just, you know, there's got to be a YouTube video where somebody changed the outcome. I just want to watch those.
There is.
I want to watch that version over and over and pretend like this never happened.
It's really funny,
Aaron,
too.
Did that episode turn out like you thought it would, or like you hoped it would, or
fuck
were
no.
they even the same thing?
No, what? Fuck no. I think, man, I asked Scott, he was with me when I watched it. I jumped out of my seat and said, fuck no.
Yeah, he did.
I was so... That's one of those things where, oh, they got me. The cliche thing that I expected to happen, I should have known better. It's not like they haven't proven it to me over and over that they're willing to go the other way. Man, I was pissed.
I expected the fight to be a Rocky fight where the mount was going to just overtake him, and then he was going to come back and get him at the very end or whatever. But instead, it was just the opposite. You know, the Viper or Oberyn was pretty much winning the whole thing, dancing around, jumping around, being very nimble. Mm-hmm. Totally won the thing, and then I thought he had him.
Yeah. First world in fighting. Never monologue,
and don't he was beat by his ego. Really. I mean, he was destroyed because of his ego. Literally destroyed. And if he would have listened to Tyrion and put on maybe a helmet or some kind of armor, he'd probably still be around.
Double tap. You always double tap.
Yeah. How about stop getting him to, who cares who ordered it? You already know I know you want to hear it and everything else. But did you really want to hear it while you got some guy's thumbs in your eye sockets? Mm. I don't think that was the plan.
Oh, that was brutal.
So gross.
Yeah, but man, just as much that got me, I mean, of course, the seeing and hearing that head splatter was pretty bad, but the teeth being knocked out and bouncing across the ground was pretty visceral, too.
It was intense, and I haven't been, even though I should have known better, I haven't been that surprised in this show. Even when they cut off Ned Stark's head, nothing has surprised me more than this. Because mm-hmm. I just thought, you don't build a character up this great and then not use him for future episodes, but they sure as hell did.
Well, and Ned Stark's death had a lot of build up. You're like, oh, they're gonna kill it, really? No, yeah, this was like boom, Oberyn was done.
Yeah Just, and you thought he had him, and mm-hmm. he should have had him. Oh man. And I just love Cersei's little look. Lena Headey,
oh,
kudos to you, because you were a great bitch.
Yes, because,
man, her look, like her, just her little smile, like got that motherfucker.
Ooh, checkmate.
And yep. The look on Tyrion's face of just despair.
Yes, like, oh, shit, Muffin. You got me.
Now, I know after that episode, we kind of debate or talking about whether or not the mountain was dead. And I'll be honest, the first time I watched it, I kind of forgot the fact that he's possibly dead, mm-hmm. you know? And until I watched it the second time, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's pretty mortally injured there. So turns out he's not quite dead. He was poisoned.
Mostly dead.
He was poisoned, yeah.
He was poisoned. We find out that he was poisoned, and he's, for the most part, he's well on his way to being dead. But the maester, who was, I guess, disbarred, Qyburn, he's got an idea to bring him back. Cersei wants him to bring him back. So, but he tells her, he won't be the same. Now, we saw Khal Drogo come back not quite right. Dead folks up north, they come back all the time. They're not the same. My question is, Scott, how much better is the mountain going to be?
Well, how much better can he get?
It's a good point.
That dude is huge. He, like, aptly deserves the title of the mountain. Just holy cow. But
didn't you love that scene where they're introduced? Because obviously nobody remembers him because he's only been in like a couple episodes and it's brief. Mm-hmm. Where he's just randomly slaughtering dudes. Like, do you volunteer for that job?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Where do they round them up? Are these prisoners that were sentenced to death? Is that what it is?
Like an arena fight or something like that? Or
it wasn't even an arena. It was like in the Rose Garden. So she's like, grab a bunch of guys we don't like and just have them run at this guy.
Yeah. We'll just practice.
And they all come one at a time. Apparently nobody thinks, let's just gather around him and, you know, we'll just jump on him like lemmings and see if that works. Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, the guy said that he's not going to be the same, but, you know, Cersei asked him, you know, well, is he going to be weaker? And he says, oh no, you know, oh no.
My question is, why is Cersei so obsessed with keeping him alive?
Yeah, I don't get that either.
Yeah, I don't know what she's got up her sleeve, but
I mean, at first, you know, when we saw season 9 in the death of Oberyn.
Season 9?
Episode 9, I'm sorry.
Episode 8.
Wow, spoiler alert.
Yeah. You know, there was the question of, like, did they both die? And maybe she wanted to keep him alive to ensure that Tyrion actually lost, you know, the death mm-hmm. by combat. But that doesn't even seem to be a concern with anybody else. So I just can't for the life of me figure out why she wants to keep him alive.
The only thing I can think of is he is a killing machine.
And it's always a good weapon to have.
It's always a good weapon to have at her side.
Yeah, but she seems more concerned with it than just another warrior. There seems to be a deeper meaning. Otherwise, she would be so obsessed.
I'm sure there is.
I mean, I don't know if she's planning ahead for like an eventual Martell backlash. So she's like, look, all right, we're going to piss some people off with this move. So I got to make sure this guy's ready to go whenever they come back. Because, I mean, at this point, as far as she knows, Tyrion is out of the picture. He's all but dead as far as she's concerned. So she doesn't really have to. I mean, he's been the thing she's hated this whole time. And now he's out of the picture. So what's left for her to worry about? And really the only thing that I can see is a Martell backlash, where now that they come, you know, his family comes back for revenge.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good point. That would be a good point.
Well, he's still got the one, or excuse me, she's still got the one daughter that's out in wherever, right?
In Dorne.
Yeah. In Dorne.
Dorne, where they're from, yeah.
So I wonder if that could play into it somehow, too. Maybe, you know, he's
going to
send him.
It's going to. They're going to Dorne for season 5. I know right. that.
So. Maybe he's
going
to send, she's going to send him to go get him, get her.
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe. And one thing I want to ask you, Brian, because this is the one thing that isn't in your format, which I'm a little surprised since you have such a great format. The Jaime and Cersei relationship this season. You don't have anything on there. What did you guys think about how that was handled? I mean, I think everybody kind of thought after the end of last season it would be a little.
I think it was. I thought it was a great way to show just how much of a bitch Cersei is.
Yep.
How so?
Because whenever he comes back, he's like, "Oh, hey, baby, daddy's home, or brother, whatever," and she's like, "Fuck you! Why didn't you get here sooner?" And she's like, "You know, hey, look, I've been a prisoner for the last years. Not like I've been out with the boys hanging out. You know,
I lost my diddling hand. Yeah,
right. I've got my hand cut off. I kind of been through. I've been sleeping in mud puddles for the last year out in the freezing cold. It's not exactly been a vacation, and gives him a hard time about that. So, and she don't give it up in the altar room. I'm just, you know.
Well, she kind of did.
Well,
whether she meant to or not, she still gave it up.
True.
And then mounts him a little later. Now, why do you think, and I'm
she's
only asking.
Playing, I mean, I think she's playing him at this point. I think she's tugging on his emotions and she's
and
got
his
a.
Penis.
And his penis, yeah.
And his, and his pillar and stones. So
do you think she, because at the very end, before Tyrion was supposed to be executed, she does go to Jaime, "I choose you," and all that. Do you think that's why she wanted to make sure that Jaime doesn't go to free him or doesn't take his side? She's playing him?
I don't know, because he did. I mean,
well, but her plan backfired, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if it had I don't know if it had to do with Tyrion. I don't know. I think it had more to do maybe with her not choosing her father's plans. You know, kind of rebelling against him. Finally, like, you know, said earlier, you know, the kids finally this season have stood up to daddy.
Oh yeah, they did.
And you know, Jaime did it earlier. He says, "Look, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to rule. I don't, you know, I want to do my thing and just do my job. Just leave me alone."
That's a really good point, actually, because it's almost like an act of defiance on her part. She told her dad that she's sleeping with her brother, and said, "You know what? We're gonna go do it right now." What do you think of that?
Do you think he knew? I mean, he had to know.
It doesn't even matter if he did know. It's just more of a she feels defiant while she's doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been lying to him. So I think he's known for years. He's always heard the rumors.
But he just because
he's made
to
reference
it.
To the rumors this last
several
season
times.
Or two, right? Yeah. You know, so he's always known, quote unquote, known about it, but he hasn't had verification until this last episode.
Yeah, when she's like, "I'm going to go call my brother, Daddy." What do you think about that?
Yeah, here's a pie chart, and my twin brother is filling it right now.
My family tree is a straight line.
That's right. Basically, Tyrion's he's just plain old screwed. He's out of ideas, plans, aces up his sleeves. But lo and behold, brother Jaime, like you said, Scott, comes and busts him out. He's always preferred to kind of talk his way out of things, but everybody's got a breaking point. Now, Aaron, was he justified in his little killing spree? I mean, because kind of went all, you know, crazy on everybody.
I do. And this is the one thing where I want to bring up from the books. And if you're obviously they're not going to introduce this because the storyline's already moved on. But in the book, you know, he had that wife, Tysha, I guess. And apparently the showrunners elected to skip most of that storyline. But apparently in the book, Tyrion snaps because Jaime tells him that Daddy knew that your wife wasn't a whore, and he basically had you gang rape her, you and your friends gang rape her, basically just to show you, just to teach you a lesson about marrying someone that he considered a lowborn. And that's really what spurred his hate. Well, in this one, they didn't go that route because, in the series, they didn't go that route, apparently because they played up the Shay angle, which is he fell in love with Shay, and now Daddy's banging Shay, and that's they went that direction. And apparently this particular section of the series pissed a lot of the book readers off. I don't personally care because I never read the book. But what do you guys think about that? Do you think that exercising that little tidbit would have helped motivate Tyrion a little bit better in the show?
I'm actually a fan of how it went down. You know,
that's what I'm thinking.
He came into his dad's bedchamber with the intention of killing her. Instead, finds the woman he loves, who rolls over, thinks it's him.
I don't think he went there to kill his dad.
You think so?
No.
What did he go there for?
I think he went there because he realized that his life was fucked. He's not going to have any access to his coin, which is really how he lived, mm-hmm. with his name and his money, and he couldn't use either one now because he's going to be, you know, he's going to flee. And he wanted to confront his dad about, why are you okay with setting me up for death? Why do this to me? And I think it was just one last confrontation. My impression, and a bunch of people were saying, why would he even go up there? What's the point of that? Da, 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 da. And that's where the book readers are saying that was his motivation to go up there because he finds this truth out. Whereas in the series, they don't really explain it. I take from the series that they did a well enough job of saying, look, I want to go confront my dad one more time and find out, why did you do this to me? I am still your son. Why did you do that? That's what I got. And in terms of, was he justified? Well, no. I mean, he still murdered two people. But I think he just snapped, and everybody's got that breaking point, like you said.
Kind of lost me a little bit with talking about the book comparison. But
okay.
But he did tell Shay and Bronn a couple seasons ago about how what his girlfriend that he liked or married, whatever, when he was younger, how mm-hmm. she was raped and stuff by Jaime or Jaime and some guys, whatever. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Because I mean, because that was kind of like basically this just kind of took him straight back to that. And that's kind of what I took from this anyway, was that it worked for me in the TV aspect of it, because that's what he basically had flashbacks to that. You factor in basically the same thing happening again. Now this time it's his dad banging his girl, and mm-hmm. I'm going all Theon and I'm cracking and I'm just.
Yeah, I think it worked. I think the showrunners left it out because they thought it was more, like you guys were already confused, just me telling you about it. I think they thought it would just be more exposition than was necessary.
Right.
And I kind of get that. But yeah, they were apparently in the book, that's what they said. They said when Jaime lets him out, he basically tells him the truth about his first wife and how she wasn't actually a whore, that they had lied to him about that. That they gang raped her because his dad wanted to teach him a lesson about marrying someone that's beneath you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's where that came from. But I didn't think, you know, they're all upset about it because I think, you know, when you read the books, you're a fan of the books, you have those expectations. Where we're show followers, we don't have those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're watching just the series. We don't know what's coming. We don't want to know what's coming. You know, we're just watching as it unfolds. And I think there was more than enough to justify going up and confronting his dad.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, do you feel at least a little bit sorry for Tywin Lannister? I mean, was he that bad of a person that he deserved to die sitting on the shitter?
Not as bad as...
I mean, all that, I mean, just even that, I mean, he dies on the shitter just shortly after finding out that his twins are definitely banging each other.
Right. I don't think I wanted him to die as much as others, but I'm still glad he did. I mean, Tywin's one of those characters that you kind of hate him, but at the same time, he still seems like a somewhat honorable man.
Whoa! What's your definition of honor here, Chico?
No, I mean, he's all about family. He's
all about the name. I don't know if he's about family.
He's all about building up his family
legacy.
To have a good name. Yeah. He wants his legacy. I wouldn't say he's honor's not the right word. He wants what's best for him and for his family, but he's not. He's not Joffrey. He's mm-hmm. not, you know, evil, you know. But at the same time, I still was cheering seeing him with that arrow in his chest. With his pants around his ankles.
Did you think he was actually going to do it? Did you actually think Tyrion was going to do it?
I didn't have any doubt.
Really?
As soon as I saw them zoom in on a crossbow and then him walk into the privy with a crossbow, there was no doubt in my mind.
I just love how everybody's calling the bathroom privy now. Like, nobody ever called
like
it
one before.
Like,
anybody's used that word before in their life.
Exactly. Now, anyone that watches Game of Thrones is like, I got to go to the privy. What? Nobody says that. Mm-hmm. Nobody says that. I wondered if he was actually going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I realized he had just killed Che, and that was fucked up. So at this point,
that was a hard one.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
I don't know. I mean, it's still his dad. It's still his dad. Did you guys believe Tywin when he's having that bullshit speech with him and he says, hey, I wasn't going to let him kill you? Huh?
I wanted to. I wanted to believe him and because I kind of like him. Yeah, he's a jerk, but there's been a lot of scenes with him that I've liked, and I've kind of said, you know what? You're a bit of an asshole, but your logic makes sense. So I think he, just for, let's say, like I said earlier, kind of trimming the fat, I think he kind of had to die, but wasn't exactly happy about it.
Yeah, I wasn't either. And you know why? Because he's the last guy that's a definite villain that I love on the show. I mean, you took everybody else that I love that's a villain out of the show. Joffrey was my number one, and Tywin was my number, and I wouldn't even fully call him a villain, because I see what you're saying, Scott. I do think he has some good motives, and he's just a master at war. I mean, you know, people are like, well, that's sick what he did at the Red Wedding, and he violated the guest rights. Well, guess what? If you want to win a war, you're going to have to break a few eggs. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Break some rules. That's what he did, and he actually saved some lives by doing it that way. I don't know. I don't think he's an outright villain, but he was a sad loss for me. I was really bummed. Really bummed. Still really bummed. I did think it was pretty fucking horrible that he would bang his son's mistress that he knew he loved, though. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
That's pretty low. Mm-hmm. Well, real quick, what do you guys think about the new power couple, Tyrion and Varys?
That has the potential to be really interesting, because those are two characters you never thought would be teaming up even a little bit.
I don't think Varys planned that one out very well.
I got the impression that he was thinking about sticking around a little bit. Like, he kind of walked back, like, to look at the city.
Well, he couldn't once he heard the bells.
Right. Yeah,
because now he can't get back in.
Yep. Varys is really on, sneakiness-wise, he's really on par with Peter Baelish.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Littlefinger. So, Tyrion, smart, they're, you know, they've joked before about how they're, like, a couple of the smartest people in the, you know, in the kingdom and that kind of stuff. So, well, I'm really curious to see how that's going to play out.
What do you guys think in terms of, you know, because Jamie's going to have to wear that on his heart, because it's his fault his dad's dead now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, do you think he's going to own up to letting Tyrion out, or is he going to blame Varys for this, or what?
Well, who's the right hand now?
I think it would be Jamie Lannister, I think.
Which is kind of funny if you think about
it. Yeah, I mean, is that an inherited title?
I think so. And yeah, you're right. He doesn't have a hand, so that's funny. I'm the hand of the king. I got a stump. I don't know if
it's going to be the stump of the king.
I think they will, just because it's his son. I mean, technically, Tommen is his son. It would make sense that his dad might want to protect him.
That could become interesting too later on as Tommen matures and maybe learns about Jaime springing Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
And then him as his right-hand man, that could be interesting down the road.
Or they could kill Jaime because of it. I doubt that would happen. I think right now they've done too much with that character, and they're going to...
Well, yeah, but like you said...
That's true.
Yeah. Game of Thrones.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. I'm excited. Well, I'm excited.
Well, good deal. Well, how'd this season go for you guys? Did it clean things up enough for you?
For me, absolutely. It gave me some things that I wanted to see, but at the same time, opening up new frustrations and really kind of leaving a lot of questions in my mind that make me want to see season 5 that much more. It was a very satisfying season.
What do you mean by clean things up?
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, as large as this universe is, so to speak, there's a lot of threads. There's a lot of smaller characters, some minor plot points, bigger plot points, characters that kind of come and go.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of look at it like it's kind of trimming a bush, so to speak. It just, you trimmed it back a little bit. Still got a good form, now let's kind of see where it grows and kind of goes from there.
I feel like each season I have a better grasp on the universe as I watch each season. You know what I mean? Like, the first season when I watched it, it was so confusing because there were so many characters and they kept introducing new characters and there were so many areas of the map and all this kind of stuff. And the more I watched, I just feel more comfortable and I recognize the names and I recognize the places and I get excited to see new areas instead of being like, oh, here's another one I got to learn. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And the showrunners keep saying it's going to be 7 years. They seem pretty set with that. So no matter what Martin does with the books, the series is going to run 7 seasons. I could see it probably going 8. But I think it's good that they have an end game. Mm-hmm. You know, they actually reference Breaking Bad because they said, you know, that worked so well because they had a set deadline and they lived up to it.
That is good news.
That's good for me. Yeah. A lot of people are like, I want it to go on forever. I don't. Not at all. And this season, Brian, to answer your question, this is probably my favorite one. I really thought season 3 would continue to be my favorite. This one, I think, jacked it up by introducing Oberyn, by having a lot of the twists that happened. I think they got away from... Sometimes I think the show relies a little too much on shock moments. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where you've got those shock moments like, oh, where they don't replay as well, you know, when you see it, when you rewatch it. Like The Red Wedding was awesome the first time you watch it, but you rewatch it, it doesn't have nearly as much oomph because it's a shock moment. You know, it's like, wow, now I don't see it. Now I know it's coming. And I think this season they had a lot more variance in terms of the plot lines and the stories seem a little bit more layered out. And it seemed like they were a more cohesive story throughout the season. I really liked it.
Yeah, I agree. This is probably my favorite season. The first one, I guess, has a certain amount of favoritism just because everything was so new and fresh.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of putting that part of it aside, just from start to finish, like I said, Joffrey dying early in the season, the viper in the mountain and the viper, whatever. That was it was a good fight. It just was a shocking ending.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It's almost like you watch every episode going, okay, is this going to top last season? As mm-hmm. far as I was really shocked then, what are you going to do to step it up this time? And that worries me a little bit.
Me too.
But that little thing aside, this from start to finish, even the Bran, even as bored as I have been with him, the last 5 minutes or so with him with the Ray Harryhausen skeletons, I loved it personally, but I'm a huge Ray Harryhausen fan, so.
They looked great. That special effect was great with the skeletons. I was very impressed, and I'm glad they killed that Jogen. Didn't like his character at all.
Although it was real quick, but that special effect, whatever it was with him laying there, kind of watching him being stabbed, looked really bad.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It was almost like they just superimposed his face over somebody else or something. I don't. It was a real quick flash, but. Whatever, nitpicky stuff. Anyway, does Dany finally make it across the Narrow Sea next season, or do you think she's just going to get burned up by her dragons?
Oh, no. I don't. I think she's going to stay there and deal with all the shit she's caused. The Meereen has too many things going on. The dragons are a problem. She's going to have to rein them in. I don't know exactly what she's going to do with them, but she's got to do something about the dragons before. And she can't get burned by them, but... She could, like Scott said, get ripped apart. The thing I'm most looking forward to is I'm really curious where Jorah's going to end up. Because I wonder, is he going to end up like in Braavos? Maybe he runs into Tyrion or something? Or where's he going to end? Like, I could see him trying to do something to win back Daenerys' heart.
Maybe he wrangles that third dragon and brings it back to
her. He just comes like riding the dragon up to the gates. He's like, I got him!
Well, not riding him, but you know what I mean? Maybe...
Walking him on a leash.
He's on a leash. He's like, stop it. Starts punching his nose. Knock it off.
Is this yours? Is this yours? This big dragon?
Yeah. Found him. He was out. He was out eating some goats. Got him. This is what I bring to the table. And I don't need a beard.
She's got a lot of, I guess, bureaucratic lessons she's going to have to learn real quick to kind of juggle everything between the cities. You know, they're already, from what I understand, I think they mentioned it, that there's these other little kind of tyrants or now kind of taken over the some of these like Astapor or whatever some of the other the one that starts with a Y.
Man, I don't know. I can't keep
it. I don't know. I know. It's hard to keep track. So I think she's really, I agree with you. First step, get the dragons under control. Then, you know, kind of fix your own house, so to speak. And then worry about taking over across the sea.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
What about a slave revolt? You think there's going to be a slave revolt with her
at some point? Not when you've got, you got the Unsullied there guarding your back. I don't think so. I think they're, if there's anybody loyal to her, it's definitely those people.
Is there like one big storyline you guys are most excited about? Before we move on, I'm just curious because you brought up Dany, but what about the rest of them? Is there one, when this season ended, was there one big plot line where you guys were like, man, I can't wait to see how that pans out?
Arya, what's going to happen to her in Braavos? What's she going to do? Is she going to start plotting something on her own? What is she going to do?
Everybody she wants dead is already dead.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hound, well, she's got Tywin. Pretty
list. Cersei is still on that list.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but she doesn't know about most of them being, you know, probably half of her list. I mean, she knows of two or three on the list, but she really doesn't know about too many else, you know, too many others, because all this is kind of going on while she's out and about.
Yeah, she's going to go after the Freys, I think, at some point. She has to. Somebody has to go after that fucker. The guy, mm-hmm. the Red Wedding right. dude.
Yeah, I think my two cents on him and Roose Bolton, I think the Boltons and the Freys are going to get overrun by the White Walkers. I think that the Boltons, now that they've taken over Winterfell, they're finally going to kind of start getting maybe mostly built or maybe completely built and finally sit down and go, you know what? Finally, I can relax a little bit. And all of a sudden, somebody's going to say, hey, guess what? There's a few hundred thousand White Walkers just outside the door. Not real sure what you want to do about that.
You're going to hear three horn blasts. Yep.
Good call.
So now every season, the ninth episode is the big one, but they really changed up that format this year. Were you glad to kind of see that happen?
I was. I was a little disappointed going into it because I wanted to see some big thing happen, but at the same time, I like that the show is constantly keeping me on my toes and keeping me guessing. You know, it took three seasons to be like, oh, I see. Episode 9 is where the cool stuff happens, and then boom, next one. It was still a good episode, don't get me wrong, but... Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite things about this show is, like, you never know what's going to happen next. And I'm consistently being surprised every time I sit down to watch it, and I love that.
I don't agree with that, honestly. I think the scale for the ninth episode kind of falls in line with the previous season. It really rivaled season two. I think it was a better battle than season two. I mean, you could tell the whole episode took place at one location, just like the previous seasons, and everything, it was a huge game changer for the series. People don't seem to think that the wall is such a big deal, but I think it's going to be a huge, important part of the story going forward, even if I don't like it.
But I think what Brian is saying is there was no like one event that just kind of made your mouth drop open and be like, I can't believe that just happened. You know,
I disagree with that. I thought the last half hour of that battle was made, like my mouth was open most of that battle.
But it was for a different reason. It was different because of, number one, the production was intense on that episode. It was a huge battle like that rivaled something like from Lord of the Rings. You know, there wasn't – I mean, look back at the first three seasons. You've got Ned Stark's death in season one. You've got the Blackwater Bay thing with a huge green fireball that, no, you know, we didn't see coming. Season three, you got the Red Wedding that killed off two, if not three, huge characters all within like 20 seconds of each other. You've got – in season four, episode 9 was, while be it very entertaining, it was just a big battle.
I think the battle had...
You got Joffrey dying in, what was it, episode 2?
Episode 2, yeah.
I get what you're saying, but I think this was a huge turning point for the series, too, because they fought back the Wildlings, and I think everybody thought the Wildlings were going to win, and they fought them back. You've got Stannis involved now. There's something else going on. The White Walkers are coming. I think that's... I don't know. I don't agree. I think the ninth episode lived up to the past seasons.
Got to disagree with you on that. I just feel like the ninth episode was almost like a giant stamp on that season. And while the ninth episode was very good and all that stuff, I think there were two or three other episodes that were right up there with it. So I respectfully disagree with you my friend.
You can disrespectfully. You can tell me and go suck a bag of whatever if you
want. Yeah, you go dangle some pillars and stones if you want to over your chin. I don't care. Anyway.
Wow, Brian.
Does season four keep you wanting more, or is it just fun waiting for the next big gotcha moment?
Like I was talking to earlier, I don't like the big gotcha moments. I think they're great and they're fun, but on replay, they don't hold up. So generally, I prefer a more well-told story. And if you can do that and throw in the gotcha moments, that's great. And I think they did that this season. If they have more of that, I continue to be amped for the show.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part. I just don't want every episode to be like, you know, Lost or something, where the last 5 minutes are some huge change of events and nothing happens before that. I like how they're sparsing things out. Everything is coming on its own merits. You're earning the story now. It's being told well. There's less boobs and more story. I like how they're doing it.
I agree. And I think it would be kind of cool to see in season five that we don't have as many of those big gotcha moments. I mean, as of right now, there's nobody that I'm like, man, I want that guy dead. You know what I mean? Like, we wanted Joffrey dead.
Isn't it kind of disappointing, though, to a degree?
That there's nobody to hate right now?
Yeah.
Yes and no, because I think it would be interesting to see where... I just want to see where the stories are going to go and what's happened to these characters. We've got so much set up right now that they could go so many different ways. I don't have to I don't have to hate someone to enjoy that go down.
Hey, and I don't know about you guys, but I hate Cersei, so...
Yeah.
I'm good with hating on her for a little bit till somebody else that can come along and make me hate them more. I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's kind of like I said a few minutes ago. I just think this was a great season as far as just trimming some of the fat or kind of trimming back that bush and just kind of saying, all right, we've kind of trimmed this down. We've still got these major plot lines, a few of these smaller ones, but a lot of this other stuff we've done away with, and so we've got room so these other limbs can grow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm looking for. There's no doubt in my mind somebody next season will come along and I'll be like, wow, what a bastard. So
do you think Ramsay's going to be that guy? I think they're kind of building him up, and I just find him more creepy than scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if he will be the one. I think he's as, like, you know, as good of a candidate as anybody else, but now that he's gotten all warm and fuzzy with his dad, I'm not real sure where they're going with him, to be honest with you. I don't know if he's going to be more prominent like he was in season three, or if he's just kind of going to be the guy off to the side of his dad while his dad gives orders to do whatever else. Because Roose Bolton, in a way, he's like Tywin Lannister, or even... But he's as opportunistic as Peter Baelish. And in a weird, bad way, I kind of like him.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I'm getting sidetracked on that. What about it? What about, is there anything else that I might have missed here? You guys got any kind of parting thoughts or maybe some storylines that we might have missed or not covered?
I think you covered the bases pretty well, but one thing that I'm more interested to see is, I want to see more White Walkers. I feel like every season we just get teased just a little bit. You don't see them on screen for more than...
Yeah, they're just dragging the fuck out of that, aren't they?
Yeah, like let's see a little bit more about what's going on with that. Let's learn about them and learn about what they do, what their motivation is. I feel like we just get a glimpse of them all the time, and that's got to be a part of the overall story.
Well, they had that huge revelation in that one, whichever episode it was. Where they turned the premiere, baby. Where they turned the baby into a White Walker?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
something that needs to be explained.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Enlightened.
And else, I mean, and speaking of revelations, this last episode we were teased with these little fireball shooting children. I don't know what, and Father Time sitting up in a tree. I don't know what all's going on there.
The three-eyed raven, yeah.
So
The one storyline that you guys didn't, or you didn't really bring up that I thought was important was the Stannis storyline.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he's finally getting some relevance in the show, and it's not just about him and the Witch Doctor.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've kind of, as much as I like it, he's one of those kind of stoic, just here's the rules, here's how I play by it, good or bad, no matter how much I like you, I'm holding you to this standard.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those guys I may not necessarily like, but I kind of respect in a way. And this last, you know, this season finale where we see him ride in and kind of save the day with the wildlings, maybe, I guess this, what is this? Is this like his way of gaining an army that he so sorely needs without, of course he was, you know, turned down for a loan by the Bank of Braavos.
Mm-hmm. No, which I think, I've got a question about that bank. He got
I got a question about Braavos real in a minute. So,
okay. But didn't he get that loan? I mean, obviously he got the army he needed. That's how he got him, right? He got the money.
Davos convinced them to give him
the money. Yeah, he convinced them to get the money. He got the money.
That's right. That's right.
Psh, jeez. It's like you don't even watch the show.
I know it. I know it. I don't know. Cartoons come on and I just, you know, go watch Scooby-Doo or something.
Ruh-roh.
Real quick. Is it me or does Braavos have some sort of identity crisis as far as this TV show goes?
How do you mean?
Because it's being sold to us as two different things. As far as Arya goes, it's this big place where assassins are trained and, you know, you want to learn to fight and this is the place to go. It's this big kind of warrior town or I don't know, how to kill 101 type of stuff,
mm-hmm.
how to be an assassin, that kind of stuff. But then the other half of it is, well, it's the Iron Bank. It's just two different, completely different personalities.
Hmm.
To me, it seems
I don't know
like
if I'm quite explaining it right, but it's being sold even on the map. You see the dot, the little coin running down the aqueduct looking thing, and but they've got a, you know, it's just that's where they go to get a loan, and one way or another they're going to get their money, that kind of stuff. It's this huge bank town, but it's also this town that's. I mean, their entrance into the port has got a giant Colossus-looking warrior guy standing over it. I don't know.
I get the impression from Braavos that it seems like the one city in Westeros that's got their shit together.
Yeah, that's what I've got, too.
You know what I mean? Like, they can do the warrior training. They can do the Iron Bank. They got all that. They've got it figured out a little bit better than King's Landing and Winterfell and all those other places that are just all messed up. They almost feel like their own separate entity away from the rest of the world. Like we got this. We're good. We got our stuff together.
We've got our hands in all of y'all's pockets.
Exactly.
So we'd rather sit back and have that instead of just sitting there holding ourselves behind a big wall and trying to control a certain amount of land.
One thing I want to point out is that since you brought it up, the Iron Bank is referenced several times, like throughout the season,
mm-hmm.
that the Lannisters owe a shitload of money. And that everybody owes them money, and they are one to, you know, like the Lannisters, they're going to collect their debts, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that's going to play into the series greatly going forward. I don't know how yet, but they mentioned it so many times, it has to be a factor.
Right.
It has to be a factor.
Yeah, even Tywin said, you know, one way or another, they get their money.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you pay them back or whether they back somebody else who gets it back for them, they get their money.
They do. And
they're very black and white. The guy even said it when Stannis came to ask for the money. He's like, you know, we prefer things that are in absolutes, that are numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very much black.
Yeah,
and
we
white
don't go on faith. Yeah,
right.
It's very interesting, very interesting. And I do want to point out the production value of this season. No show I've ever seen on television has production value this fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much money they're dropping into this thing, but kudos to them. Holy crap!
Absolutely. Well, anybody got anything else?
No, man. Good, man. We covered a lot, and I'm sure there's some storylines we didn't talk about, but holy crap, we can't talk about every damn thing that happens. There's so much. No. I do want to ask you before we depart, who was your which character changed the most in your opinion this season? Like, you either liked him and now you hate him, or you didn't like him and now you like him?
Sansa. I mean, she kind of went into this one feeling super sorry for herself and hating life and basically giving up. You almost kind of thought she might have been contemplating off on herself. And that last shot of her wearing that dress and looking that look in her eye, like she's like, all right, it's my turn now,
mm-hmm.
is really, I can't wait to see how that goes. And I think she changed a lot.
Yeah, she's definitely one of the first people I kind of thought of about that. But wow, that's, let me see. Sam Tarly.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
You know, he's gone from just a whimpering bag of wuss to, like I said, I mean, like the main scene, you know, where he stands up to Gilly, he says, you know, this is how it's got to be. This is, you know, I've taken my oath. This comes first. You stay here. I'm going to protect you, but I'm going to be doing it out here standing by my brothers, yells at Pip, open the fucking door, you know. So he's starting to, of course, he's a little bit behind the curve as far as the other Night's Watch people, but he's gaining ground fast. I think he's one of the bigger travelers as far as character growth.
I'm going with Littlefinger. I for me, Littlefinger, you know, he's always been that real kind of guy that's...
Weasel.
Yeah, he's a little weasel. But this is the first time I've seen him with an actual... I've actually seen the deepness of his character, you know, and like his weakness. Mm-hmm. And to me, that changed how I felt about the character. Because before, I was kind of like, all right, he's this guy and he's just shady and for no other reason. But now that I've seen his motives and where his concerns and cares are, I'm really a lot more interested and invested in his character. So that was a big change for me. Big change for me.
Well, good deal. Well, to all our listeners out there, we definitely appreciate you guys sticking around and listening to this and downloading this episode. This is why you guys are why we do this. If there's anything that you feel we might have missed or what have you, definitely let us know. You can let us know a number of different ways. You can go to thehollywoodoutsider.com, message us there. You can also go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Tweet us at @H_outsider. Send us an email at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or you can always call us and leave us a message or a text at 818-81-I'm-A-Ho. That's 818-814-6246. And just a reminder, this is a bonus episode, so happy name day to you, I guess.
I don't even know what that means.
That's what they call birthdays in Westeros.
Oh.
So let's see. Just a reminder, new episodes are every Thursday. You can subscribe on iTunes, Zune, listen to us on your Stitcher radio app. Do we even do Zune anymore?
I was going to say.
Is that even around?
I think it is. You mentioned it, so I'm guessing. Yeah, people use it, they'd know. So if you don't find it on Zune, you should probably buy a new device.
There you go. Listen to us, like I said, on your Stitcher radio app. Give us a thumbs up. And, of course, just plain old RSS feed. I guess that, guys, appreciate you guys sticking around doing this with me. This is one of my favorite episodes of the year to do. So thank you guys for joining.
Thanks for having us, Brian. Yeah. I appreciate you inviting us on the show.
And kudos on the format, man. Really, really enjoyed this discussion.
Yes. Yep. Great job. I love how you broke. And you know what? I listen to a lot of Game of Thrones casts. This is the first show that I've heard do this. So great. Great job.
Yes.
Yeah. What?
Score Brian. Bam. All right, well, I think we're going to leave you guys with that. And thank you for listening, and Valor Morghulis.
Which is High Valyrian for Pie Popcorn.